You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Rick Franzi.
Welcome to today's episode of Critical Mass, Coast to Coast. I am your host, Rick Franzi. I host this business talk show, which airs live on Thursday afternoons at 3 p.m. West Coast time. If you're listening to this show in the future as a podcast, I would encourage you to listen live during our broadcast time, heard exclusively here on octalkradio.net. The goal for this show is to help you, our listening audience, make better decisions, and we do that by interviewing thought leaders and peer executives from around the country who have transferable knowledge, ideas, and experiences. I would like to thank Smart Business Magazine for sponsoring our show today. Smart Business Magazine is a management journal providing insight and advice for top decision makers. To learn more about Smart Business Magazine, visit their website, www.sbnonline.com. Critical Mass Coast to Coast is brought to you through a partnership of Critical Mass for Business with Executive Forums business owners in select markets across the U.S. Executive Forums is an international organization committed to helping members take their business to the next level. My book, Critical Mass, The 10 Explosive Powers of CEO Peer Groups, was the first book ever written about the peer group experience and is available for sale on Amazon.com. Simply type my name, Richard Franzi, F-R-A-N-Z-I. Say, if you'd like to learn more about CEO peer groups, then I would suggest you check out our website, www.executiveforums.com. And if you'd like to join in on the conversation because you're listening live today on octalkradio.net, then find the community chat room, log in, post your thoughts. Our capable producer, Paul, will be watching those thoughts and periodically bring them to my attention, and possibly I can bring them on with one of our three guests that we have on Critical Mass Coast to Coast. I'd like to bring on our first guest, and his name is Joe Yesalaitis, and I'd like to welcome you to Critical Mass Coast to Coast. You're CEO of Avalar Consulting, and welcome to the radio program today.
Hey, Rick.
Let's ask you to explain a little bit more about your firm and what you're doing in your market and help us to understand what it is that your firm does.
Right. So we provide computer consultants and contractors to our client companies for 3-6 month contracts, things of that nature. Special projects usually that they have going on where they need something that is out of their core competency or what have you. Now, that kind of falls into two different silos. One is the enterprise information technology world that you might find in an investment company or an insurance company or a medical devices company. The other part of that silo, or the other silo, should I say, is really the scientific and engineering world, where we're providing folks who do, say, chip design or board design, firmware developers, etc. Those could be aerospace contractors or subcontractors, people who are OEMs for electronic devices, what have you. So that's what we do. We provide consultants and contractors.
And Joe, in listening to the type of people you're providing, these are very specialized, for the most part, it sounds like technical, talented people that you're placing at these companies. Is that true?
Yeah, they're different types and skill sets are just mind-boggling. The technologies that our folks get into, it's really interesting stuff.
I have to ask you, Joe, before we move on with the interview, because of that type of a niche, that type of a person that you're finding and the type of employer that requires them, how has your business been affected by the last few years of the changing and slower economy that we've seen?
Well, let's see. About around the third week of October in 2008, it was kind of like somebody turned the lights out. And for a long while after that, it was kind of like trying to sell ice cubes to Eskimos. But the good news is, right, that through 2010, and especially in 2011, first quarter, the demand has started to really, really ramp up. And, you know, we talked a lot about pent-up demand in 2010. I think the rubber's really hitting the road here in 2011. So we, like everybody else, we took a hit in 2008, 2009, but we're rocking now.
And you sort of helped me to formulate what I kind of expected to hear, but I wanted to validate, and that is my sense from the work that we're doing out here on the West Coast. Many firms are now feeling comfortable enough to bring on additional payroll, but they're still not comfortable to bring on regular. So they're looking to the temporary workforce to try to make that labor line as variable as possible.
Yes,
and that
great.
Sounds like the niche that you're situated
mm-hmm.
in.
That's right. Yep.
Okay, great. Thank you for sharing that with us. And
I don't know what you're hearing from your other guests, but 2008 for us, and I know it hit in different parts of the country at different times, but it was literally like a light switch. 1 week, boom. It just hit us. It hit pretty fast and pretty hard.
Yeah, and I had a person describe it today like a Nike swoosh, you know, that went down really fast and strong, you know, like and then now it's rebounding, but it's rebounding on a more steady and even kind of keel, but it's not anywhere near as the rapidity of coming back isn't what it was when it fell apart back in 2008, 2009.
Right. We've got careful, astute, thrifty buyers out there. They know what they need. They know what they can pay for it.
So let me ask you, of all the things that you've learned in your particular business experience, Joe, is there a key lesson that you've learned through that experience that helps you guide and lead your firm today? In other words, is there a guiding principle that you're using for your firm?
Yeah, you know, I got to go back to Tom Peters' old book. What was it called?
In Search of Excellence?
In Search of Excellence, maybe.
Uh-huh.
And he talked about... He talked about in that book a concept of sticking to the knitting, right?
Yes.
Whatever that is, right? Stick to what you are good at. And, Ken Wax, right? He runs
yes.
a peer group. We had a discussion the other day about Fastenal, right? They sell
right.
nuts and bolts. How sexy is that, right? But what they do is stick to the knitting. Well, that's one of the key concepts that I have stuck to over the years. Stick to the knitting, and also a bias for action. That was another one of Tom Peters' concepts. It's better to make a plan, do something now rather than get into that paralysis by analysis that a lot of people get into. So those are two key concepts.
Well, and I think back, I happened to hear Tom Peters speak live kind of when the book was out, and he was really kind of sharing. And to come back and reinforce your point, he said, if you're a shoemaker, you better love leather. You know, and that's sort of what I think about Fastenal as well. They love their industry, nuts
right.
and bolts and screws. And to them, they know... They're experts at that.
Well,
that
we love consultants and computer technology, you know. So try not to deviate too much from that.
Okay.
Not to say we haven't had some missteps, right? I mean, we owned part of a training company at one time. We're not trainers, so we got rid of it. So.
You know, and I've had guests on the show that have talked about, you know, growing, and sometimes at higher revenue levels, they found the business less profitable, or their enjoyment of the business was lower than, you know. And so sometimes when people say grow or die, I caution business leaders and entrepreneurs. There are companies that grow, and actually after they've grown to a certain point, they realize that they didn't really do anything better for the company, because maybe they're doing more, but they're actually – the business is making less. And so focus is really the most important thing, I think, for – businesses and entrepreneurs.
Yeah, and I think pretty clearly it's a different skill set, a multi-tier management of a multi-billion dollar company rather than an entrepreneurial mindset. It's just a different skill set, different animals.
So tell us where you see and how are you positioning your firm for the next wave of growth?
The next wave of growth is sort of unpredictable, because this is what I've always loved and hated about our industry, right? There's this constant fragmentation of technology, right? Where every week or 2 weeks you hear about a new piece of software or a new technology that you didn't know about before. And all of a sudden, these little technologies become big technologies, but they can become very specialized. And to the people that use them, they become, a religion. So it's sort of unpredictable as to where the world goes next in terms of specialties. But we know one thing: they will increase the number of specialties. The technologies will fragment, right? So what we have done is to invest in a very sophisticated delivery system where we take tens of thousands of potential we'll say workers or consultants or contractors, candidates we'll call them, and we're able to identify them very quickly and slice and dice them by skill set, demographics, what have you, and deliver them very, very quickly to our client companies, because it's all about speed and it's all about specialty for the client who has the project that they need done yesterday. People don't call us and say, we're thinking about doing something next year. They call us and say, can you have somebody over here? Can you have three people over here? We'd like to start a project, and yesterday would be good.
Exactly. And, last week on Critical Mass Coast to Coast, I was talking with Carlos Casas from the Rock Team. I'm not sure if you're familiar with his firm.
I am not.
Rock Team. The only reason... I'm sorry?
I am not.
Okay. The only reason why I ask is that we were talking about, and it has been my experience here on the radio program, companies that are founded on technology or companies that are in the technology industry move at a much faster rate of change, because the underlying technology, as you just said, is ever-changing and shifting and evolving. And so to stay current on that, it's unlike maybe any other sector that I've seen is – technology plays, the CEO president really has a challenge, which is to keep his firm relevant in the marketplace.
Yeah, it's truly mind-bending sometimes, but yes.
So let's talk about a recent experience, or it could be somewhere in your past, where you learned a valuable lesson, but it came from either a difficult or painful kind of business experience, Joe.
Well, you mean related to conferring with my peers and so forth?
Yeah, or actually I was thinking, a lot of times on the show, guests will share a recent experience or a painful business lesson that they learned, and it becomes a foundational experience. For instance, a guest said, at one point my company had 65% of its total revenue with one customer, and that
right.
customer left us. And it took me 2 years to rebuild the business back to that level. That'll never happen to me again. I'm just wondering if you have kind of a painful business lesson that you'd like to share today with our audience.
Yeah, well, not necessarily painful, but certainly, three things come to mind that I certainly could have used more better advice from people who have been there and done that. One was selling a company. One was buying a company. And probably a half a dozen bad hiring decisions where I wish I could have had, some of my industry peers, come in and say, just be a fly on the wall and say, should you really do that? I could have negotiated better terms. I could have made better deals. I certainly could have hired a couple better people at the time in my life when I had to hire them. Yes. So this is going back, you know.
We think of them as business Sherpas, you know, people that have been up the mountain and kind of passed through the valleys and kind of can help you with their experience or at least their insight and exposure to the, you know, to the problem or the opportunity.
Yeah, so not necessarily painful, just things I could have really, really improved upon.
Mm-hmm. Right. I can appreciate that. I guess unlike a boat owner, which they say, you know, the happiest 2 days in a boat owner's life is the day she or he buys the boat and the day he or she sells the boat. I don't think entrepreneurs are like that, right? The two best days in a business owner's life aren't the day he buys the business and the day he sells the business. It's what happens in between those two transactions that really is why entrepreneurs do what we do.
Yeah, well, I'm a boat owner too, so I've only gone through the first happy day of my life on that front. But I mean, look, if you don't like the game, and I mean, make no mistake about it, I've heard people, you know, three times in the past 2 weeks talk about the book, The Great Game of Business. If you don't like the game of business, I don't know how you could do it. I mean, you gotta be jacked up about it. You gotta be interested in what you're doing. You gotta love competition. You just do.
And you know, many times, as you know, we've had guests on the program over the 3 years. This economy has challenged business leaders, CEOs, like no other economy has in our professional experience. I mean, you'd have to be, I don't know how old you'd have to be, but you'd have to run a business through the Great Depression, I think, to be dealing with what people dealt with in the early, you know, through the 08, 09 timeframe. And it was incumbent on them, and it still is now, for that leader to show that they have a vision, or at least that they're positive about the outcome, because employees were similarly shaken because they'd never been through a time like that, and they were really looking to the leaders of the companies to, you know, it's good. I don't know where this is going to go, but I have confidence that we can get through it together, kind of an attitude.
Right, but we're gonna stand at the wheel and drive through the storm because there is no alternative, and that's kind of the attitude I think you have to have.
Right, but that's a great point because, you know what, not every leader had that attitude. They might have been in different places in their life. Either they had a newly formed business and they were undercapitalized, or they just didn't realize how hard it was to build business, so they got out of it. Or they were on the other end, maybe, and they were kind of tired of the game and looking for an excuse. And in some industries, this recession gave that excuse to those business owners. The reason why I'm saying that is we work with our clients out here in California saying, you know what, this might be the best time to grab market share because there may be less competitors out there vying for the business. I don't know how you're seeing that in your market.
Yeah, sure. I mean, look, I run a fairly or a not very highly capitalized business, right? Most of our capital is tied up in goodwill and information, right? So when we get a downturn, a business like mine is not getting ground into the dirt by payments on expensive pieces of equipment that you have sitting in the parking lot that you can't use, or giant manufacturing facilities. So I don't want to say it's easier for us as a service business, but you know, talking to some of my manufacturing buddies and construction buddies, you two want to talk about tough. Those guys had it tough. You know, I don't think I had it that tough compared to them.
I don't disagree. A manufacturing company that has an investment in plant and equipment needs to make that plant and equipment work to pay for itself. Mm-hmm. And if it's they're idle, you're still paying the debt, whatever, and you can get in an upside down position a lot quicker than a service company that maybe has a little more ability to curb some of their expenses and rein in costs when they see a downturn coming. Like you said, though, this downturn, I think I can still remember politicians and the Fed chairman saying, well, I think the subprime catastrophe can be contained. It's not going to get past, you know, the housing bubble. And then you see what really happened. You go, wow, did they really not know, or did they just not want to say at the time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, there are folks who just couldn't do it anymore. I mean, I feel sorry for them. You know, they came to the end of their rope. They just couldn't make the payments anymore. So, you know, I think everybody has a point where they just become insolvent, right? So,
right.
Kind of like the U.S. government.
I had a radio show guest on here, and we always ask the guiding employer, and he said, as long as you have cash, you're still in business. But when you don't no longer have cash, I don't care what your income statement said or what your balance sheet, I mean, other than that says, you're out of business because you have no way to pay your supplier, and yep. No one will do business with you.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a guy that was running a third-generation construction company. And, you know, construction companies are notorious for, you know, ramping up and then not being able to last the long term. So I think he had credibility in what he was talking about. Joe, it seems like to me, though, that you're in a space that is kind of as a canary in the coal mine, a leading indicator, because of what we talked about earlier, which as business picks up, people need more bodies to do the work, but they're not ready to make the commitment to a regular, permanent, call them what you will, full-time employee. So using skilled labor that's outsourced like you offer is a real opportunity. Do you feel that way? Do you think that you're a leading indicator?
Yeah, I think it's somewhat geographic too, and I think we are certainly here in the Northeast. I think we are a leading indicator. Yes.
And so
I know guys that are in you know, my business, say in the Midwest, that saw it, you know, crashing down months before I did. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Why that is, I don't know. Maybe the car industry in the Midwest, I'm not sure. But, yes, I believe that we are a leading indicator, but I believe that there's a little bit of a geographic skew to that, too.
So because this is a coast-to-coast show, and we have listeners from a variety of different markets across the U.S. and probably outside the U.S. because we're internet and we beam around the world, but what are you sensing from your local greater Philadelphia and east, that corridor? How does the overall economics feel for you guys?
I think right now, like I said before, I think we are we're living on pent-up demand. Anecdotal evidence, right? Talking to a manager who used to run with a department of 30 now, or 30-something people. Now he's down to 20-something people. They're just coming to the end of their rope, right? I mean, they're just, you've pushed productivity to the nth degree. Now you just can't go on. You have to service that pent-up demand, right? So I think that may be what we're seeing. I hope, you know, that we can parlay that into real growth.
You mean sustainable?
Yeah, sustainable growth. But I think the national debt is a huge problem.
And it's been all over the news, hasn't it, with mm-hmm. you know, what's going on in Washington, D.C. So, yeah, I mean, these are...
I mean, that's the elephant in the room, isn't it?
We're not out of the woods in this economy. You know, we do a survey out here every quarter of our community and listeners through Critical Mass, the radio show. And the last survey, which came out 2 weeks ago, which was for the first quarter, basically it said optimistic, business is better this year than last year, and I'm very confident that business for the whole year will be better in 2011 than 2010. But I'm still uneasy because it's not like, you know, this economy couldn't go backwards. And the place that they were the least confident and the most unsure was when they would be hiring or rehiring staff to help with their business.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a pretty common. I think that's not unique to just the that I hear, you know, kind of in our conversation today and other versions of guests that I've had on Coast to Coast. You know, a similar sense, and so I do think, if something unfortunate were to happen here in the U.S. that affected our economy in any significant way, I don't know that it could sustain the positive improvements that have been made in the economy couldn't be undone with one bad event. So.
Right, and the healthcare legislation is a huge question mark for business. I mean, it's really, you know, we really don't know where it's going to fall out, right? You don't even, I don't think anybody knows what's in it yet, in total, right?
Right.
But we know there's some bad stuff for business.
Yeah, there's a lot of challenges and headwinds that business owners and entrepreneurs are facing. If someone would like to find out more about your firm and they wanted to do that online, Joe, how would they find you?
All right, so Avalar is spelled with two A's. Long story, but I know we're running out of time. It's www.avalar.com. That's www.aavalar.com. That's how you can find
I'm never too busy for a good story. Why do you have two A's in Avalar, Joe?
Because my last name's Yeselitis, and I stood next to Barbara Zygmunt at the back of the line in school for 12 years, so I figured I'd put something at the beginning of the alphabet.
Jesus, that's a great... I'm glad I got that out of you. Thank you for volunteering that. Well, I appreciated the time on the radio program, and thanks for the laugh at the end. It was formative and interesting and fun to talk with you, Joe.
Yeah, nice talking to you.
Okay, have a good day.
All right, Rick.
Bye. What a great story at the end of the show, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, Joe, for sharing it. And we're going to come back with our second guest on Critical Mass Coast to Coast. That's Ryan Clark, who's founder and CEO of PeopleShare. And so Ryan will be with us. But first, we're going to take a break and hear about Smart Business Magazine.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
Welcome back to this installment of Critical Mass Coast to Coast. I am your host, Rick Franzi, and if you're listening live and you would like to participate in the interviews that we're having today on Coast to Coast, check out the community chat room on octalkradio.net's website and post your thoughts. Our producer will bring them to my attention, and if I can, I'll try to work them into the conversation that I'm about to have with Ryan Clark, founder and CEO of PeopleShare. And I think it's really great that Ryan is our next guest because, as you heard, we were talking with Joe about technology and how that challenges and creates opportunities for business. And part of what I want to talk about with Ryan today is how technology has changed his business, and it changed how he interacts with both his clients as well as the resources that he has and resumes, skill sets, etc. So, Ryan, welcome to Critical Mass Coast to Coast.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me, Rick.
Why don't you tell us more about PeopleShare?
Sure. I think it's a classic story of how we get started with the company. My partner and I were 50-50 partners here, working for a very large publicly traded company headquartered in Dallas, and a lot of the bureaucracy. Anything that we needed to get going required, an act of Congress to implement. So Dave and I worked very well together. We were peers at this publicly traded company, and we said, we could really do this on our own and do a heck of a better, much better job. And, I said, I've actually had the same thought. What are you thinking? He said, hey, I'd start my own company. And my partner had started his own company back in the 80s and sold it in the 90s, another staffing company. And so we met that weekend and met every other weekend until we opened our doors January of 2005.
Okay, Ryan, you said you thought you could do it better. What do you mean by better?
Well, staffing is done local. I'll give you a quick statistic that might blow your mind. If you look at the restaurant business, 60% of all restaurants are the big chains. And if you look at the shipping business, FedEx and UPS dominate that business. 80% of all the shipping is done within just those two companies. And you look at my business, the staffing business, you look at the three largest players with a market capitalization of over $30 billion, and they make up less than 10% of all staffing companies in this country. So basically what that told my partner and I is that staffing is done locally. That's the way to do staffing. You really have to know your market, know your candidates, and it's a relationship business. So I'd say that that's, you know, there are several key differentiators, but one of them is that is we are the premier staffing service in Philadelphia because that's where all of our offices are, right here in the heart of Philadelphia.
Are you, what area of staffing is your firm focused on?
You know, that was a critical decision, and we absolutely thought that we made the right one back in 05 because we haven't wavered. We are strictly support functions, administrative, clerical, light industrial, customer service, basically any type of person that keeps your office running, those are the positions that we'll do on a temp or temp to perm or a direct perm placement business.
I don't know, Joe, if you, I'm sorry, I don't know, Ryan, if you happen to hear me speaking with Joe, who's different area, but temporary workforce, technology-based. It's my belief that that's a good space to be in right now because what he and I were talking about and what I've seen and heard from other business leaders is that, you know, while people need additional help, they're not ready to rehire people full-time. They'd rather make that, you know, payroll line as variable as possible. Are you seeing that happening in your space?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Rick. You're absolutely right on that point. And there's a confluence of things that are helping our business. And one is exactly what you just said. Just that variable contingent workforce that allows our customers the flexibility to ramp up and ramp down. Some other smaller factors that really are helping our business is, you know, not only the flexibility, but, you know, you look at what's happening with healthcare in this country, where the majority of our temporary employees, they're not charged, our customers aren't charged those healthcare costs, workers' comp rates going up. Temporary or contingent workforces are the first to come back out of a bad economy.
Yeah, we had a conference last week. We had 100 business leaders attended, and a gentleman stood up, and he made a very compelling argument that the other business leaders should pay attention to that sector of the market because it's a leading indicator about the health of the market that you're in. How active temporary work firms are. And how many people are posting those types of positions? Because it's historically been the tip of the arrow to a recovery, because that's how people get their toe back in the water, if you will, of rehiring and building their staff again.
Absolutely. I mean, we've seen this cycle, you know, hundreds of times over the years, and you know, that's absolutely accurate. So I'd be surprised if anybody disagreed with that logic.
Okay. Question that I like to ask and have asked each of our guests for a couple of years now, and I always tend to get a subtle and variety of responses, and that's, have you developed a guiding principle, Ryan, that you're using to lead and grow PeopleShare, and would you share with us what your guiding principle from a business perspective is?
Absolutely. We basically have acquired every guiding principle from one book. We actually based our entire company on one book, and that book is Good to Great by Jim Collins. Pretty well-known book. And there's a lot of different philosophies, and we follow them all, but there's one that's clearly more important, and it's just getting the right people on the bus. Actually, it's getting the wrong people off the bus, then getting the right people on the bus and getting them in the right seats. So, you know, when you've looked at the tough economic times that we've gone through over the last few years, we haven't wavered from that theory either. and the fact that we've gone out and paid the talent what they needed to be paid. And you know, a lot of people would ask me, hey, during this really brutal economic times, isn't the upside that you get your labor cheaper? And you know, our answer has always been no. When the economy comes back, and you know, it obviously will, it's coming back now, what's going to happen to that talent that you're underpaying? So you know, our guiding principle has been getting the right people on the bus, and we'll spare no expense to get those right people on the bus. And you know, it's worked for us. And an industry, which I'm actually a little bit ashamed to tell you this statistic, that the industry average turnover rate is 44%. It's not a real admirable statistic for the staffing industry, whereas our turnover rate is about 5.5%. So I am very proud of our turnover rate internally here at PeopleShare. And, you know, we've gotten the right people on the bus, treated them well, and, you know, rewarded and recognized them.
And even though I've asked that since June of 2009, I don't know exactly how many times we've talked about that, you're the first leader to say it in that way. And so I agree.
Okay.
I agree, and I'm always fascinated with what our guests share with us during the segment of the show where I ask them to share their guiding principle. That's why I'm still asking the question.
Yeah, good.
I wasn't when I started asking this question, I wasn't sure if it had legs. You know, I thought, boy, after about a month of asking business owners and CEOs their guiding principle, I might start hearing the same four or five answers, and it might be time to retire the question. And
right.
And in fact, Ryan, it's gone the other way, such that my business partner and I published a book last week. Actually, it was released last week, available for sale on Amazon.com, of a compilation of guiding principle answers to questions that we ask of our guests in the, you know, in that first year of the show. So, really interesting.
Great. Good.
I wonder if you could share with us any direct experience where you benefited or maybe didn't benefit from a formal peer group. You know, people around you, whether they're mentor or business associates, not trusted advisors, not people that you're paying a fee to, but true peer presidents and CEOs of companies who gave you some insight that was, you know, valuable to you in how you made a decision.
The one person that really comes to mind is somebody that I've known socially for a long time, and have played hockey with him for years. So I knew him socially before I knew him through a business network. His name's Bill Davis, and he's the founder of a company called MedStaff, which staffing company, just strictly nurses. And when he came to us, or we came to him, we had asked him, hey, you've been extremely successful in the staffing industry. Would you help us? And he said, by all means, I'll help you. What kind of help do you want? We said, any help that you can give us. Would you give us advice? Would you give us your money? Would you become an investor in PeopleShare? Because you've obviously done it extremely successfully. And he said, I'm going to give you the best advice, and I'm going to say, no, I won't give you any money, and I'm doing it for your own good. I took on investors. He told us he took on investors when he started MedStaff back in the mid-80s. It's probably the worst decision that he made, and the fact that he gave up a lot of equity in his company. So basically, Dave and I said, if there's somebody that's going to drive this business and drive that top-line revenue and drive the profitability and the market share of our company, it's going to be us that do it and the internal employees. And, you know, the investors was not the way to go. And you know, I will say that to anybody starting their company. When you need funds, absolutely, you probably need to have angel investors or private equity or venture capital money. But if you can avoid it and keep 100% of the equity, that way you don't have a contingency plan, you'll be that much more successful. So that peer group of somebody that sold his company for, you know, many, many millions of dollars, that was the most simple but probably the most accurate advice that I had gotten.
What a what a great example of how valuable other people's perspectives and experiences can be.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, my business partner and I, we believe that capitalizing on opportunity and avoiding mistakes are keys to a business's longevity. And peer groups and peers can help you with both of those. And, you know, you didn't have to go through your first business when you sold it and seeing how much of the equity you had to give back to the early investors, even though you and your partner built the company. You were able to avoid that by this guy giving you something, and he's right, more valuable than money, which was this lesson that you didn't have to learn the hard way that he learned for you.
Sure, and it wasn't until, you know, years into it that the advice finally hit home. Of course, we walked out of that meeting disappointed that he wasn't going to give us any money.
It
turned out to be
the
most sound advice and a real blessing.
Yeah, it makes me think of the Bill Murray's talking about caddying for the Dalai Lama, and he asked him for a tip at the end, and the Dalai said, "I'm not going to give you anything now, but, you know, I'm paraphrasing, when you die, you'll receive total consciousness." And, you know, Bill Murray says, "I got that going for me." So,
well, I got that going for me, exactly. Classic, classic scene. Which is nice.
Okay. Can you share with our audience a current challenge facing PeopleShare and the steps you and your partner are taking to mitigate that challenge?
You know, this one might be a little bit surprising, seeing that we're a recruiting and a staffing service. That's what we really do, is we can go out and get the best talent for our customers. So it might be a little bit surprising when I tell you our biggest challenge is finding talent internally. You know, the staffing world is you know, truly, you know, literally and figuratively, it's a 99% perspiration business, meaning our salespeople are out there pounding the pavement and literally knocking on doors, and that's how we get our businesses, cold calling and walking into offices. So trying to get the talent that can, A, not only do that and have the courage to go in and cold call and drive the business, but, B, somebody that actually wants to do this job, that's our biggest challenge, is finding talent internally and specifically on the sales side. So the way that we're trying to mitigate that or lessen that or you know, make that an easier hurdle to overcome is a variety of different ways. You know, every win that we have, we're very active on the Facebook, the Twitter, the LinkedIn, really trying to get our name out there as being one of the best companies. We're ranked one of the best places to work by the Philadelphia Journal 4 years in a row. We're on the Inc. 500 as one of the 500 fastest privately held companies. So our reputation is really helping us attract that top talent. So continuing to win those awards, continuing to have the growth that we have, 611% growth in the last 4 years, and then also using headhunters to go out and find us the top talent in new markets. So it's really a challenge of finding the top talent, specifically the sales top talent, and then secondly, finding the new market that we want to go into. So we're in 7 markets currently, and our 8th market looks to be either Princeton, New Jersey, or Manhattan.
That it takes a unique person to be able to cold call as a regular and required part of a sales job.
You know, unique, maybe a little bit crazy. Has no need for approval. When you're doing that job, it is a lot of courage, a lot of charisma, and it's the old catcher's philosophy. You know, the catcher's equipment is the tools of ignorance. So I can say that confidently because I'm still doing that role, you know, as a co-founder of PeopleShare. It takes a lot of things and, you know, courage and maybe a little bit of a crazy element, but finding that person that wants to stay in the staffing role is, you know, those people are worth their weight in gold.
You know, one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, and we've kind of touched on it, but I'd like to ask you specifically if you have anything else to share or add to it could you, you know, and that's how technology has affected you and your business. Is there anything else in that topic that we haven't talked about that you would like to share with our audience?
Sure. You know, there's one thing that you look at staffing, and it's an old business model. We don't have like a software company might have something that's really cutting edge. It's really changing the way that people live their lives. You know, staffing's a very staid and traditional business model, so it makes it a little bit difficult to use technology. But one way that we think that we're revolutionizing how staffing is done, and again, whether it's temporary or temp to hire or direct hire staffing, there is one area of technology that I hope that I don't come across like Al Gore saying that he invented the internet here, Rick, but one of the things that, and we are the first, and as far as I know, maybe one of the only companies to use this technology, is that when we send out a resume to our customers, we include a hyperlink on the resume that allows you to click on that hyperlink and watch a 90-second video interview of our candidate.
That is a great idea.
You know, and the lead-in to this, Rick, is when you're talking to an HR professional or a CFO or anybody that's in a hiring role at a company, you know, the proverbial question that I'll ask them is, tell me how long does it take you in the interview to determine whether or not he or she is a good fit for your organization? And inevitably, the answer is, well, I'm very good at my job, Ryan. I'll know within 30 seconds or 90 seconds. And that's the lead in to say, well, here's a 90-second video interview of our candidate, and they're answering behavioral-based interview questions that are customized for you. So in a 90-second interview, I'll probably be able to ask them roughly three questions. I'll ask my customer what three questions that they want to ask their prospective customer. So it's a mini 90-second interview that allows our customer to evaluate that person's communication ability, their thought process, and really a customized question that would answer something that's relevant to their job.
I think, you know, having been a hiring manager in the past for, you know, more times than I care to recall, there were just some times where until that person walked in and sat down, I wasn't sure about them based on the resume. But when they did, I was sort of sure whether I should have continued or not continued. And being able to pre-screen some people just by watching a video, what a productivity tool for your clients.
Sure. And, you know, the thing that's incalculable, or the thing that's never calculated, I should say, is people's time. People look at their accounts payable register and they look at the checks that they've written. But the thing that nobody ever seems to calculate is people's time and their productivity, which is every company's biggest expense, is labor, direct labor. So if somebody comes in for an interview, you probably need to be at least cordial to that person and give them a half an hour to 45 minutes. Well, that's half an hour or 45 minutes of wasted time that you'll never get back. But, and you know, with this, you're exactly right. It's a screening tool, and it's a time savings tool. And think about it this way, that you can increase or basically make your talent better, that if you can only interview 5 to 6 people a day, with a 90-second interview, you could probably screen 10 times as many people, make your hiring funnel bigger, and your end result is going to be better.
And I think it's better for the candidate, too. I mean, you know, nobody wants to go on those job interviews where you get a sense after about 3 minutes, this isn't good. But you can't, as the candidate, it would take a lot of guts to stand up and go, you know what? Mystery here, and you're probably not going to hire me anyway, so I'm going to go get a cup of coffee at the Starbucks. I mean, so from that perspective, it saves the candidate's time as well.
Absolutely. There's actually two benefits to the candidate. One is the time savings. You're right on, where we have actually taken videos of our clients and taken them on a mini tour so that they can look at this company before they even submit their resume. And then the second benefit to them is we tell people, hey, we can do this the old-fashioned way and mail your resume to a variety of different customers, and they'll get their mail within a few days. Or, with at the touch of the button, I can instantly market you to 300 area customers, and they'll have your video on their inbox instantaneously. So the benefit for the candidate is a job that much more quickly.
Wow. Well, I'm glad we had a chance to cover that topic with you specifically, Ryan. If someone would like to learn more about PeopleShare, how do they find you on the web?
Our address is PeopleShareWorks.com. That's PeopleShareWorks, W-O-R-K-S.com. They can always call into our headquarters, which is 610-326-0700. Ask to speak with the recruiter. We are a even though we're in seven locations across three states, we still feel that we have that small company feel. So if anybody wants to just ask for me directly, I'd be happy to take their call. And you know, as a salesperson myself, anybody that wants to call me and sell their services as a candidate, I certainly would take 5 minutes of my time to speak with them and direct them to the right location. So we are currently looking. Just one last thing I wanted to let you know, Rick. We just got the word that we are hiring for 1,600 customer service representatives come September 1. So we are now engaged in that search now. So a lot of jobs to be had in the upcoming 5 to 6 months.
Well, that's a great way to end the interview. Good luck with that. And I'm sure people listening now and at some point in the future, iTunes, one of our podcast vehicles, you probably will be contacted by those people. Well, Ryan, thank you very much for the time you spent with us here on Critical Mass, the radio show. I've enjoyed our conversation today.
Hey, it's been a pleasure. Thanks, Rick.
Have a good day. I hope you've enjoyed our show today and both of our guests. If you were expecting to hear an interview with Jeremiah White, I apologize, of White & Associates. I'm sure we'll pick up Jeremiah at a future time here on Critical Mass Coast to Coast. I would like to thank Smart Business Magazine for sponsoring our show today. Smart Business Magazine is a management journal providing insight and advice for top decision makers. To learn more, check out Smart Business Online, which is sbnonline.com. And if you'd like to learn more about CEO peer groups, check out our website, www.executiveforums.com. If you're listening live, then do not shut your player off, because my business partner, Doug Gefeller, has an exciting and interesting interview with Donna Thiessen, Vice President, Human Resources for Allergan, coming up at the top of the hour. I know I'll be listening to that, because I'm sure she's going to be a marvelously fascinating guest, and Doug will do a spectacular job of interviewing her. And I also know that he's going to be talking about the coaching perspective, more information about coaching from the client's perspective. So until we have a chance to do this again, this is your host, Rick Franzi, saying I hope that all your decisions move your company in a positive direction.
You've been listening to Critical Mass Coast to Coast, only on octalkradio.net.